like a dream scenario to score, a theme for, or the whole movie, anything.
Oof.
I said rapid fire. Okay. So don't
X-Men.
Think about it.
I'll go X-Men. I'll just, yeah, we're going rapid fire.
I was
going to
go X-Men too.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work. This is a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and it's a podcast hosted by myself, Kyle Sconawill, and my longtime friend from work, Robbie Earle. Robbie, I just got back from a little quick trip, little jaunt this weekend. One of those trips
California.
That's kind of...
California!
That's right. Gosh, I love Phantom Planet. People know, that song, but they don't realize that the records after are so freaking cool. Raise the Dead is cool. Devastator is so cool. So check them out. Go ahead.
Did you know that Phantom Planet originally had, or that Jason Schwartzman was an original member of Phantom Planet? Bro,
my brother. I am... like a day one install like fan. Yeah.
Oh, wow. I'm a truther. A phantom head over here.
Phantom head. I am, and we did listen to that song because I was in California. It's one of those trips where it's kind of hard to adjust back to real life when you're not waking up next to the California coast without much to do other than just like drive around. It's like, oh, yeah, I got to like tune this terrible vocal, and I got to print stems and... it's a little bit hard to readjust. But yeah, I flew to San Francisco. So shout out. I wanted to shout out our California listeners. I flew to San Francisco, spent some time in Half Moon Bay in the Monterey Peninsula, and then we road tripped Highway 1 all the way down by Big Sur, got the pictures by Bigsby Bridge, had lunch at that one restaurant that's in the middle on the cliff, and drove down to Malibu and L.A., and did a bunch of like walking and shopping and eating, and then stayed at a really nice hotel in Newport Beach and flew home. So it was awesome. And, you know, I'm driving by the coast on the south side of Highway 1, that stretch, kind of when you go past San Luis Obispo and start getting closer to Malibu, and it just feels so much like Iron Man 2. Like, I don't know if they did, but you remember when he's driving his car real fast on the PCH, mm-hmm. and then he's got the... what is it called? The structure thing in the back.
Yeah. Like the diagram.
Yeah. Diaphragm maybe. what's that called? Diorama. Maybe that.
Yeah. Or, there you go.
Whatever. You know what I'm talking about? I think they filmed it right there. I could be wrong, but it sure feels like you enter into Iron Man territory. What is it? 164 Malibu Point or something. Dang it. I wish I knew that. Anyways, I'm back. And shout out to our California listeners. You have a beautiful state. It's an expensive state, my gosh, but it is beautiful.
Hey, speaking of, since we probably won't get to talk about this naturally in any other way, new Jon Favreau movie coming out soon.
Mandalorian and Grogu?
Yeah.
Yeah.
First time he's had a movie in theaters in a long time.
That's right. Have you heard at all about the Sheep Detectives? Have you heard any of the buzz?
We've been wanting to see it. I've heard it's great.
We're super disappointed. So Annika and I are going to New York City this weekend. It's our 15-year wedding anniversary. 15 years.
Wow.
That's how old we're getting. But we looked up tickets to go see the Sheep Detectives in Times Square. And it's already being pulled out of theaters, at least in New York. So we might go see Mandalorian and Grogu this weekend. But I was going to go see that movie. We had a funny journey with that movie because we saw the trailer a long time ago and it looked super goofy and we were laughing about it, my wife and I, but we're like, we kind of both want to see that weirdly. Like even though this is a weird trailer, like that would be our scene. And then reviews start coming out that it's like generationally good, apparently just like unbelievably good. And so it became like a running joke. Like, well, now we have to go see the Sheep Detectives. So I can't wait to talk about it. Anyways.
Our friend Emily, friend of the pod, has seen it and said that we would love it.
Really? Okay. Before we get into Daredevil, how are you? Anything new with you this week?
Oh,
did you go to California or New York?
I did not go to California or New York. I don't know. No, it's a pretty quiet week. I think just
good.
We're gonna have like a low key Memorial Day weekend. I think no concerts this time around, which is fine.
You've only been listening to Dave Matthews on repeat on Spotify since.
Obvious. I mean, you know, like every other week.
Flute solos.
I have been thinking a lot about the Mandalorian movie just because, you know, it's been so long since we've had a Star Wars movie. And for some reason, I'm getting the sense that it's ultimately going to be like a fine movie is kind of the early consensus that I've seen.
But I think for some reason, we have to remember it's a kid's movie. That's what I think is the hurdle here.
That's probably fair.
What were you going to say?
Well, I just really want it to work. Like, I think I just like the people involved in it. I know that they, you know, like, I know that Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni both believe in, you know, their vision of Star Wars. And, you know, I just feel like I want Star Wars movies to be good and for people to be excited about them. And I think it's generally more fun when that's the case. So I've just kind of been keeping an eye out and hoping that some excitement is generated.
I feel no buzz. And it's crazy that Kyle Sconawill is sitting here saying that because I grew up a Star Wars fan. Mm-hmm. Star Wars is basically like what Marvel could have been in an alternate universe in a bad way, where I was so in and they just by poor decision, totally lost me. Totally lost me to where not trying to be like anti-Star Wars YouTube guy or anything, I just find myself having no interest watching any of this stuff anymore. So like I didn't watch second season of Mandalorian. I didn't watch Ahsoka. I didn't see I got a screener to the Darth Maul thing. Haven't watched it. I just literally went
from I have heard the Darth Maul thing's fan. Great.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. I'm not critiquing it because I haven't seen this stuff. I just have no interest anymore. And so like this movie, I wish it was good. I hope it's good. I think they are trying to make it a kids movie. So I know there'll be some reviewers who are frustrated that's not adult enough. And I love Jon Favreau, both as a director, but also as a human. Whenever I listen to him talk about it, he does have a care for the source material stuff. But I just don't care, man. I'm out. I mean, even this is the most blasphemous thing ever. Even Andor season 1-2, which is so good, it was a little bit of work for me to like watch it. I don't know what it was so well done. No critique, but preference wise, I like had to be like, okay, do I want to watch this for the pod? And even when it was good, I was like, okay, that's horrible. Yeah. There's the title of our episode.
no, but you know, like I do. I think part of that is I still think it's just, I don't know that I've ever seen the hopping between mediums thing done like as well as everybody hopes to do it.
Wants it to be, That's fair.
Like, because like Andor is incredible. I mean, we're about to talk about Daredevil Born Again, which is incredible. And so I'm not ever going to wish those projects away. But I think that, you know, Daredevil in part, I think it works so well because they've let that be a thing where it sort of exists in its own. It's in the MCU now more. And we've talked about how the more they incorporate that, the better. But I still do think it's a tricky thing. Like, even as I'm kind of going through the rewatch, and I think you're getting just about caught up with me, which is great because we're kind of entering this home stretch of 2026 ahead of Doomsday, and we'll kind of be on track. But like every time I hit a series, I just like grind to a halt. It takes me forever, and it has nothing to do with the quality of the series. Like I think it's easier for me early on. Like WandaVision always goes by super fast. Because the episodes are short and they're fun to watch. And then, you know, Loki is so like, it still can take a little bit, but that also moves pretty quickly and it's early in the watch order. But by the time you start to get like deep into it, it's just like, man, I just don't know if I can, I wonder if some of the Star Wars stuff is partially, the Rise of Skywalker disappointment. But also then it's like, how many people now feel like they don't necessarily know how to jump back in because they haven't followed all the Disney Plus stuff since Rise of Skywalker.
And that way it's almost a props to Marvel then, because you're saying they're facing the same challenges and Marvel is holding on to some people. I would say more than Star Wars, at least. You know, part of that's, you're right. It's a medium thing. By nature, you have to watch 5 hours versus 2.5, and so, or 6 or 7 sometimes. It's going to be that way. I personally am on, I feel like in the Multiverse saga, the rewatch stretch of Love and Thunder, Loki, Quantumania, Loki season 2, and No Way Home, maybe even including Hawkeye, is probably my favorite stretch. Like when I go through that, it's so much fun. And I feel like the way we moved Quantumania around, it really improves both seasons of Loki and that movie. But then I'm with you. For me, just preference wise, not quality wise, it comes to a grinding halt. Going from Echo, Shang-Chi, Miss Marvel, She-Hulk, Wakanda Forever is probably my least favorite stretch. And it's not that all those things are bad, but like it's a grind for me to get through those.
I think
that's actually going to tie into what I was going to say about Born Again.
Well,
so here's what's going to happen today. We're going to reflect on our final words on Born Again season 2. And then we're going to be joined by the Newton brothers to talk about their work with the music from that show, both actually the first season and second season. And then we'll close us out with some thoughts of where could Daredevil as a character and the show go in season 3 and beyond. So briefly, before the Newton brothers sign on here, what are kind of your lasting thoughts of Daredevil Born Again season 2? Anything you want to say to close us out? And let me quick say, it does, the Kingpin stuff was a delight for me to be syncing up in my rewatch with Hawkeye and Echo right when I'm also closing out Born Again season 2. So like there was a lot of that world for me, you know. Daredevil shows up in Echo at the beginning, and I feel like it does fit kind of the exact tone. And I haven't got to the Echo finale yet, which is the one episode where like if you just chop that off, then I think you go from there and you'd be golden with Fisk. But I even like Fisk in Hawkeye. I like how Hawkeye is trying to avoid him getting involved like at all costs. Even he's like, we don't want this to be the case. And I really don't think he did. I know what we always say about pulling him out of the shadows being a mistake, and I still stand by that, but he isn't weak in that show. He really does manhandle Kate until like explosive arrows, and then he's run over by a car. It's not like he, you know, he rips a car door off. He is clearly superhuman in his strength, even in that show. And the dread is there, like the way he's got the tics with talking to her mother and how she can't get out of the business, the way Kazi is terrified of showing up there. And then even in Echo, like I think where Fisk works the best is, do you remember that scene in Echo where she's like being mischievous and she like breaks the motorcycle out of the glass and she's going to get arrested by like 15 cops? And all that happens is this car pulls up, he gets out, and all the cops like stand down and go like, don't you know who that is? And there's this cool song playing. And it's almost terrifying. Yeah. Like, how can this guy just walk in and say, she's coming with me, not with you? And all the police have to disagree to it. That part of it is not only a great iteration, it syncs up well with Born Again season 2. So that's a quick little side note. I enjoyed that.
Yeah. No, I do feel like he's been pretty consistent. Yeah, I think if anything, I wish that there was a little bit more intentionality about bridging the gap between exactly where we left him at the end of season 3 and where he picks up in Hawkeye and Echo. I do appreciate that Echo tried to do a little bit of that with the flashback. But yeah, man, the further I get from Born Again season 2, the happier I am with it. And I say that it's not like I ended it unhappy. We were both super high on it, but it's just, it's nice because I've thought about it a good bit, which is always a good sign. Like it stuck with me. I'm thinking about it more than I am the Punisher special at this point, which is also kind of telling, although that's largely preference. But I think my big takeaway, and we can get into to more of this after we talk to the Newton brothers, but I just think that it was truly a unique thing. That you know, like at this point, they've made so many shows, they've made so many seasons of Daredevil, and then all of these other, like, we've talked about them doing kind of comedy and sci-fi and procedurals and fantasy. And still, I think that, like, there's a world where this was just not anything new or anything worth talking about, where it was just kind of great, but, you know, more of the same. And maybe there are people that are upset that it isn't more of the same, like that still just want them to keep doing different versions of season one or season three. But I'm so happy with the way that they have moved the ball forward on a character level while still keeping things consistent and honoring the roots of the characters. But the season as a whole did totally different stuff with all the characters that we know and took them into new places and put them into to different kinds of situations where we had to see them react differently. But then, you know, to end with Matt in a whole new kind of predicament that we've never seen, it means that we get to end it excited for yet more evolution. So, you know, we talked about all the technical stuff and we'll talk about that more. But I just think as a whole, I'm really grateful for the direction that they took this series, and you know, I'm hoping that they are able to continue moving in that direction for season three, and that there's not some kind of change up depending on the streaming numbers.
So, I totally agree. As a follow-up to the streaming numbers thing, I want to correct something I said at the end of that episode 2 weeks ago. First of all, there's no confirmation that they're moving off the showrunner. In fact, I'm almost certain that's not going to be the case. I probably just read something BS. So I don't think they're making any wholesale changes because of the streaming conversation we had. I also think, and someone can fact check me on this, that it's actually been streaming fairly well per our conversation post it coming out and all being out. So when people do go find it, like, I think it was still number three on Disney Plus today, 2 weeks later. So when people go find it, I think they're going to find that it was really great. So I'm with you on all that stuff. One of my other lasting impacts of the series is that I feel like it paints season one in a better light. And I'm very thankful for that. I think season one, when I watch it, I was excited about Daredevil being back, but I don't think it aged as well. There were some things that, even though week to week I was excited, that I now look back on and go, yeah, that felt a little segmented, blah, blah. But I feel like season two did a lot of work to enhance all that stuff. Not fix, but enhance all that stuff. And like plot holes or plot questions that were left dangling, they came back to in season two. And I'm just thankful that season two was just as quality as it was. I'm so thankful for the visual stuff, and I'm so thankful for the acting performances. And I think that it takes some time away from it to realize that the people who are crazy in the minority, but still upset about little things about Born Again season one or two, because there were still some people, it's such a small minority. When you get away from it, you realize like this has 90 something percent. It's less than 5% of people. And that's probably even less than that, because it's the people that are mad enough to go on Twitter. So I got to get off Twitter, because it was such a well-received season. It is deserving of all the praise, and I really enjoyed it. I am excited to talk about, and I kind of doubled down on this. Well, I'm excited to double down on this. I talked about this a little bit 2 weeks ago, about where I think now we go. And I kind of want to hear your perspective from the comic run, because this is now setting up a famous comic story. And then I'll bring my more thought out perspective from like the MCU side of things. But overall, my takeaway is it's really, really good. preference wise, I still prefer Loki season 2 and WandaVision. I just watched Loki season 2. That's still just more my genre. But I think on our website, I adjusted, it's right there in that tier as well. So we have WandaVision at S tier, and then we have Loki season 2, and then this show ahead of Loki season 1, which I just rewatched. I think this was better, and definitely over the first season, and probably over Moon Knight and Hawkeye and shows like that. So incredibly thankful for it. Okay. We're gonna come right back, and when we come back, we're gonna talk with the Newton brothers, and then after the Newton brothers interview, more on where Daredevil can go in the future. We'll be right back after a quick word from these sponsors. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. For some, summer is their favorite season. Travel picks up, the kids are out of school, and adventure is the focus. But for others, juggling it all can be tough and can feel overwhelming, and counting down the minutes until the kids are back in school. And many worry they're wasting the days of sunshine. Both Robbie and I are looking forward to summer. My wife and I are going back to Michigan to visit our families, play some golf, and enjoy the beach there. Getting that time to recharge with our families really helps us thrive. And so we put an emphasis on self-care during that time, both Annika and I connecting, getting outdoors, spending time with our families, and just discussing what really matters in life. Well, I encourage you guys to build in time for yourselves this summer as well. Therapy can help people better understand their needs, feel more confident setting boundaries, and create a vision of summer that actually feels good. BetterHelp is here to help, and they are awesome. BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally. And they have quality, licensed therapists that are there to help you. BetterHelp does the initial matching work for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. You don't have to say yes to everything this summer. Find support in therapy. Sign up now and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's right. Check out BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com. Okay, the Newton brothers, Andy and Taylor, are longtime friends of this podcast. Is this their third appearance or second appearance?
Third
appearance. We're so excited to talk to them and what they've done with season 2, but also they've been crushing it just in major feature films for a while now. And so, so these are some of the best in the biz. And so without further ado, I'm excited to introduce you, Andy and Taylor, the Newton brothers. All right, gentlemen, Taylor, Andy, the Newton brothers, the best in the biz. Welcome back to Friends from Work. Is this your third time or second time now? Third?
This is third, I think. Yeah.
Third,
I
think.
Yeah.
You're seasoned veterans of the pod at this point. Love it.
and that's actually kind of where I wanted to start here, because, you know, I think the last time or the last two times we talked to y'all, you were kind of, relaunching a Daredevil franchise. Then you were relaunching the storied X-Men animated franchise. Now you're able to kind of come back to Daredevil after having reinitiated that. I'm curious, how does that change your process as you're coming in for a season 2 when you've sort of already had the chance to work with the character and maybe get a feel for certain themes? Do you have a different perspective entering a season 2, and if so, kind of how does that differ from the way that you approached it initially?
Yeah, I think it there is a familiarity that we're able to work with on a season 2 because we kind of understand the character that we're living with, musically speaking. But then also the relationship with the Marvel team is in a similar place, in that we kind of have an idea. I don't want to say we totally understand, because that's kind of part of the fun process every time, is exploring what is who the character is this season and what the challenges are this season. So there are always sort of new hurdles to sort of jump over. But with a season 2, it becomes really fun because you can really flex on some of the ideas that you want to explore, you know, like ideas that I think there was like an interesting thing when we were trying to figure out how we were going to play this sort of resistance theme that plays throughout this season. And there was an interesting moment where Taylor and I had been trying some work with some like just simple bass guitar, like eighth and 16th note bass guitar, just very simple, but stripping out a lot of the other low end that we had in season one. And it was sort of this idea of like a bit more punk, having a bit more punk rock to what is happening. And we weren't sure if it was going to work, but it was something like different from season one, but we felt confident that we could try things like that. And in doing that, like big props to like the Marvel team, I think Sun and Dario in a session, they were like, what is that? What is that guitar? And they soloed it and played it. And they were like, that's it. Like that's we want that to be like one of the things. So that's just like one example of something that like we're able to do in a season two, where it's like, let's maintain sort of the themes and the idea and then add new themes and come up with sort of a new sound in places that we can.
Yeah. And I think too, there's always, as we're processing, going through it, we're always filtering out, you know, new ideas, also taking into consideration what we can expand on in the new show and what the creatives want to do. And also, you know, what the fans are liking and where we can push and sort of expand on those kind of things.
Well, and speaking of things that you guys have expanded on, I love your use of organ and choir here. Mm. And I know that there were hints of that for sure in the first season. I feel like, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, it's dialed up a little bit. Like specifically a moment we can talk about is when Fisk enters the courtroom in the finale. I forget the track name, but there's almost like a Russian men's choir kind of thing as kind of this operatic moment when he walks in. Talk to me just about choir. Talk to me about your usage of it, like your use of vocals on this, the whole soundtrack, and just also like what the thought was behind that specific cue.
In season one, we had for Fisk, when he was like being sort of devious, like under the radar, we had this sort of, we had this male falsetto melody that would play, that would sing, not play, sing, whatever.
Is that one of you?
It was one of us. Yeah. Yeah. It was one of us a demo idea. And then when we recorded it, like, real singers sounded too good. Like there was sort of a bad quality. I mean, for what it's worth, like just sort of a naked vulnerability of like, this is just a demo. But then that like ended up being moment. Like the, yeah, exactly. 100%. Yes. Yes. So in this moment, we had this idea, like Taylor and I were like riffing on that scene for a while because it's a big moment when he comes in, and we were like, what if we pay off that theme, but it's no longer a solo male falsetto vocal, but instead it's like a huge like male choir singing the same thing and not falsetto. And we were so scared to present it that we presented two other ideas as well, because it was such a like insane idea. Yeah. It's really tough. You know, it's like, it's really tough. It's funny, like, you know, when you hear a song as musicians, you hear a song, you're like, oh yeah, that's such a great idea. Oh, and it's so easy. Like I could have done that. I mean, not I could have done that, but we always have that moment in anything, right? A movie, like, oh yeah, I've had that idea. I could have done Interstellar or whatever, right? but the execution of like you standing there like in a towel after you get out of the shower, like at an easel, like to paint something is like a very like, uh-oh, like, what am I going to do? Like, what color paint? Like, clearly Taylor and I are using red today. So today we're going to paint with red. Like, but it's such a weird thing. So anyway, all to say, like, presenting that piece was, like, very nerve-wracking. We didn't even present it first. I think we presented it third. We were like, here's option one, here's option two, and here's option three. And then they all do sort of this, like, one, two, three, everyone pick. And they all picked that version, which was great. Anyway, that was unanimous. A much longer story than you wanted, but it's very relevant.
And we recorded most of the choir in Vienna at the Synchron Stage. And from season one, we actually, our assistant, Lily Marlovitz, she was doing demos to mock up for soprano singers. And unbeknownst to us, she has an amazing voice. And it became the sound of the female singer, sort of the sound of the show that you hear throughout is her voice, because we ended up just kind of falling in love with her voice and the way it sound. And that, as we expanded to season two, we sort of had more of the choir in Vienna supporting her voice and sort of gets, making sort of a bigger or at moments more intimate ensemble, depending on what was happening on screen. But it was great to play with that. And we have a lot of, she also can write in Latin and so, you know, so does Andy. And so we, there's a lot of Latin in the show. And it just really adds an authentic element, I feel, to sort of Matt Murdock's world, you know? Exactly. That's it.
Yeah. I'm actually so happy to hear that though, because I, you know, I produce music and I'm always trying to wonder, like, are you faking a lot of these choirs? But you actually went to Vienna and recorded a choir. So that makes me happy. Good for you. That's so dope. Yeah,
all the voices are all real. It's either me, Andy, Lily, or the beautiful choir.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, you guys sound amazing.
I'm curious. When you talk about that process of kind of pitching different themes or different versions of themes musically, how often do you find yourself getting into a conversation with the showrunners about, you know, what's driving that decision? Like about the kind of your underlying like story motivation or how you think that this sort of fits with the overall project versus just the actual kind of technical execution side?
You know, it always usually starts with a conversation and we've usually read the script and kind of getting an idea of what they are wanting to go for emotionally or what they're trying to get across to the audience or in the scene. And I usually feel that we have a lot of ideas and then we sort of hone it down to, let's say, three or four new themes or depending on what characters are on, you know, on screen. And how we want to develop those characters that, you know, as you saw, you know, Muse in season one, and now you've seen season two and you see sort of what's happening with Heather. And you know, even the theme for Muse is it's starting to change because it's obviously not exactly Muse. So, I think understanding what the goals of the creatives are and trying to understand that and then pitching ideas and what happens, which is always wonderful, is when there's a collaboration, you know, they have ideas, they hear our stuff and it informs a change of direction. And then we sort of give them something else and surprise them because it's always about trying to give them something that they have an idea, but you sort of outpace that idea or give something that maybe that hits home to them that they feel like is working.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's very collaborative. Like it's such a wonderful team, that we get to work with on these shows. And like, you know, like the, when Kingpin, has his boxing match, that episode, Sana had like initially, like we did something for that scene. It's a tough scene because it's like, he's coming in. It's kind of, the scene is light. He's coming into this boxing match, but then it gets dark. And we were sort of trying to all like collectively figure out like, what is the tone? And like, that was a fun situation where even one day Sana brought in just some band music and was like, she's like, I don't want this sound, but like, I want this attitude, you know? And that's like a really cool, like discussion to have. And everyone always gives, there's a very good dialogue around, all of the important scenes. And I think that's very helpful for us, even like what is not working and what is working. It's very helpful to discuss it. And Dario always has a good idea of like understanding, like if this is the scene we're looking at, he's like, well, this is what preceded it and this is where we're going. So this is what we need this to be, which I think is very incredibly insightful and very important for us musically. And then Brad always has such an amazing sense of like where everything should be and what everything means. So there, we get into these deep discussions often. And it's wonderful because they all have a really great point.
And they're great. And they're all Daredevil fans. I mean, they love the comics. I mean, you know, nothing is more heartbreaking when you're on a project And the, you know, the people who are sort of in charge or helping creatively, they don't necessarily, you know, connect with the material. Everyone mm-hmm. loves Daredevil. They all connect to the material. They all want the show to be great. And it's just really inspiring for us to sort of like, you know, be the best that it can be.
First dumb question of the day on that note. Are you guys ever able to just be fans of it? Like, do you get to the premiere or the finale and go, dang, that was good. Like, they took what we did and that really worked. Or is it, hey, it's just not my scene. You know, I did this stuff, but you know what I mean? Like, are you able to just appreciate it ever?
I mean, we're definitely appreciating. I think when you're in the thick of it, it's hard to have that sort of like perspective of that. But afterwards, you know, you sort of look at it all, and like, you know, like Vincent came up to us and at the premiere, and he was like, you know, I was expecting, you know, this low voice, and you know, but you know, he was just speaking in his normal voice, and he mm-hmm. was just very appreciative of the music, and he said thank you, and Charlie gave me a hug, and like, you know, the mm-hmm. guys are just super sweet, and I feel like, you know, it really lands on you how lucky you are, you know, and you know, even just like Brad and Sana, you know, saying great job, congratulations, you know, those things. I mean, you're wanting everyone to experience, you know, what you experienced as a fan, you know, in the comics and stuff. So I feel like we sort of, in the beginning, there's a lot of excitement, and in the middle, there's just a lot of like, you know, like you're going into it. And then at the end, there's like, oh, wow. You know, I think that's sort of the process.
It's like when you're making the song, you're like, this is the coolest song I've ever made. You bounce it out. The next morning you listen to your AirPods, you're like, this is terrible. I should quit everything I'm doing. How can it sound this bad? It's like the journey the whole time.
There are moments where we, you know, like the episode where we lose Daniel, like that was, so Taylor and I, that was a moment where we were able to like fan out in the session, the spotting sessions where you, you know, you watch the show down and take notes on where music should be or shouldn't be and what kind, et cetera. So in the spotting session, usually you're kind of paying attention, like taking notes, like making mental inventory of like, well, where things should be, thematic ideas, arc. That one episode, we got to the end and I was like, sorry guys, like I blacked out on notes on this. Like I was just so invested in the story in that whole episode. I like fanned out on it. And that's a big testament to like all the writers and the producers and the editors who like do this great job of like getting this thing put together and, you know, in a place before it's done. And I think there were actually like three episodes where I kind of had like a blackout moment, like, oh man, we're going to have to rely on other people's notes on this because I just fanned out the whole time.
And the silence in the room was very quiet. You know, Daniel's death, you know, we were all just sitting there sort of just staring, and it was a moment. Yeah. Those are the geeky moments for us.
I love that.
No, that's cool to hear. It's funny because Kyle and I talk about that even just from the podcast perspective when we're watching episodes, and sometimes, you know, you're keeping in mind the whole time the notes and the things that you want to hit and make sure that you discuss. And then sometimes just look up and I haven't taken down any notes because I'm just so, you're so locked in and you're lost in it, which is the goal, you know, for us at least. For you, you do have to be able to make notes so you can do your job. But no, that's cool to hear. I'm going to swerve a little bit because now I'm just curious as we're talking about these various episodes. Was there a particular approach that y'all brought to the flashback episode when you found out that you were going to be going back to this kind of season one era? Was there anything that you wanted to bring that was a little bit different and maybe more reminiscent of the score from the original Netflix series? Or was it something that y'all were wanting to kind of intentionally meld in with what you were already doing and link those themes back? Or did you not really think of that as a separate endeavor at all?
No, we definitely did. Yeah, we love the original, the Netflix series, and we're always thinking with what came before, and I also think, you have to think about, you know, what the new themes are and what the new sort of characters and how it's going to relate and change. But we wrote new things for Foggy, and we changed some stuff for, obviously, for Fisk and Vanessa. And mm-hmm. I think the biggest thing was sort of the emotional connection and the arc of the whole, that whole episode, and making sure that it really told a story that they were going for. And then we would sort of, like, you know, we wanted to make sure that, because we know how much Foggy is a beloved character, you know what I mean? And, mm-hmm. and he's such a great actor that, and it's something that I think, you know, when people lose someone that's one of their favorite characters, you always want to treat it with, like, kid gloves. So we really wanted to make sure that it landed, and we stayed out of the way when we needed to, and bring emotion and quiet when we needed to. But it definitely was a bit of a dance. It wasn't just like, here's music. It was sort of like finding that, that, you know, and sort of honoring that sort of what came before situation.
Yeah. It came off that way. So I was curious if that was intention or if y'all just accidentally crushed it.
That's great. Yeah. That's good to hear. Yeah. A lot of effort went into that episode to make sure that everything sort of, like, landed as it should, like, and how the whole, how it all just sort of, like, comes together at the end is really wonderful. That was definitely a lot of work on that episode, but I feel like it really came across nicely.
Okay, rapid fire three-parter to get you out of here. Three-parter. One, first question from our listeners: is there a Marvel character or film that you would, like, a dream scenario to score, a theme for, or the whole movie, anything?
Oof.
I said rapid fire, okay? So don't
X-Men.
Think about it.
I'll go X-Men. I'll just, yeah, if we're going,
I was
rapid
gonna,
fire.
I was
X-Men.
Go X-Men.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, speaking on that, can you tell us anything about X-Men 97 Season 2 without getting shot?
We can't. We'll get shot. We'll get shot. Yeah.
it's a lot of fun, man. I think you guys will be very excited, and it's just what you liked about the first one, and it's awesome. Yeah, I really, really love it.
Perfect. Okay, last question. Unique here. Is there another composer that you guys feel like is just crushing it right now? Who are you dialed into that we should be dialed into? Who do you look at and go, wow, they're really doing some incredible work?
Oh, I love that question. There's so many. I mean, there's a lot of good work out there right now. I'm listening to a lot of bands right now, so it's like, I mean, bands. I'm deep into Turnstile right now. I'm loving Turnstile.
Nice.
Okay.
They're headlining ACL here in the.
I'm in Austin. Yeah, I really love this artist, Eka Vandal. Like, she has a lot of, like, just go check. Just, you got to see it with a music video. ECCA Vandal. Yeah.
Okay. I've been thinking about, you know, somebody.
Will say one composer who I really love, and I've loved for a while now, Labyrinth. I really love what he's done. Like, outside, I know there's been a lot that's come up recently, but, like, I mean, when he put out that first season of Euphoria, I was just like, I loved everything that he was doing. I love him as an artist. I love, like, how he treats, I mean, Taylor and I love to work traditionally, but we also, like, we're 50-50, like, geeked on traditional and 50-50 on treating sounds and playing with stuff. And I feel like he really, like, dives into, like, being unique. And anyway, I could go on and on, but
that's perfect.
I'll leave it there.
Yeah, I've been listening to so much. We've been, just based on what we've been working on lately, we've been working on, like, a lot of, like, dark vocal stuff. And I've been listening to a lot of, like, Deftones and old Tool. Whenever project we're on, we're always looking back at, like, or what artists can we work with on this and stuff, and right now, so my head is fully much in that land I was really bummed I couldn't see Prodigy. They were out here. I didn't have the time, but I really wanted to see that, you know, those guys play. But Yeah.
Well, we really want to see more from you guys. How about that? How's that for a tie?
Yeah. Oh, thanks, Kyle. Thanks, Robbie.
thanks for joining us. You guys are the best. We'll probably see you again, I'm sure, in the next year or so. A lot of stuff coming up. Yeah. We're really excited
to talk X-Men 97.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Keep crushing.
Let's do it.
Keep
crushing. Love that.
Just keep crushing. We're such big fans.
Thank you guys so much. Thanks, guys. Really appreciate you guys.
Thank you. Wow, that was so much fun. Rob, they've now been on the show 3 times and it just feels so natural. I legitimately look forward to talking to them. I feel like they're becoming friends of the pod, like we always say. And so after we hung up, we stayed in chat for a while and I just like, I'm going to hang out with those guys at some point. That's my goal. It's just cool. It's cool to hear the behind the scenes of the music stuff.
It's cool to hear about the behind the scenes. I also love that, I mean, we've talked about this with Daredevil Born Again all through season 2. When I've said, if you're someone that loves the Daredevil character and especially some of these modern, more recent runs like the Charles Soule and Zdarsky run, then I don't get how you could not love what's happening.
Yeah.
And it's fun to hear that really is the vibe behind the scenes too, like both from them on the music side, but also like the showrunners and the producers and everyone at Marvel that's speaking into it. Like they genuinely love the character. They want to do that character justice. And that is like, that's the thing that I'm always saying about Daredevil that I think makes it special is for, you know, I'm not saying it 100% hits, but every time someone's writing or drawing a new Daredevil run, there's this kind of added pressure. It's sort of like, okay, well, it's, you know, it's Daredevil. So this is kind of when you take your big swing. Like, is it, you can't just do a comic that would be like a good comic for a not Daredevil comic is like below average, you know, in the Daredevil context because people's expectations are so high. So I feel like they're kind of bringing that to the show. And it's just it's the same thing that excited me, I think, when we were first talking to like Henry Jackman way back and kind of hearing some of the thought process that went into that first Winter Soldier kind of Captain America theme transformation and all that, where you just kind of, you realize the care that's going into it at every level and how none of it is... None of it's just like throwing stuff against the wall and seeing what sticks. It's like there's a lot of craft, both
right,
like the technical side and the thematic side.
My two favorite answers from the interview, that was one of them. Obviously, if you're a listener right now, you're thinking to yourself, everyone's going to say that because it's, you know, it's they're doing media for their thing, promotion for their thing. But I truly believe them when he says that. The higher ups involved at Marvel and the people making the show care so much about the character. I think it does reflect in the episode. But I also enjoy talking to people, even from films that we don't love. When we talked to Julius from Brave New World, like we don't love that movie, but he cared. Like he was really intentional about his decisions there. And then obviously a lot of stuff gets changed in editing process and all this stuff, but it's just always, it's reassuring to hear they really care about the stuff they're making. My second favorite answer was when he talked about that Kingpin cue, just because it's refreshing to know that they are like, even in the musical sense, taking swings that make you nervous as an artist. And that's where I want all of these makers to live. That's what WandaVision was, is we're going to try some really weird stuff and it might not work, but the reward when it does work, totally worth it. So
yeah,
I love that.
Yeah. I just had to like, in my head the whole time.
That's what I'm saying. I tried to do something similar back to them.
You know, and I also just think that is true. You know, people are always going to say, oh, it was fantastic. We loved working on it because they're promoting stuff. But I think that that you start to realize when you talk to folks that there is the kind of canned promo answer, and then there's the answer when you really you get into the weeds and they kind of they show and not tell. And I think it's like it's such a great look in a microcosm of what I think worked about this show, like the way that, you know, and they've been on before and talked about how much they loved the original John Pisano work on the first three seasons of Daredevil. And, you know, they've obviously honored that, bringing the theme forward. But I like that they, you know, they again brought up today that they kind of wanted to have some connectivity there. And it makes me excited to see what they're going to be doing in X-Men 97. Now that I've kind of, you know, now that we've seen what they did on a second go around, like building things with the Daredevil world, what that means now.
And maybe something else too. We don't know. Let's just say there were a few hints that there could be some more fun stuff coming. So extra thanks to them. So fun that they take the time to jump on our podcast. I'm going to close out this entire Daredevil chapter, Robbie, with a reflection on, or a prediction, not a prediction, a discussion, I guess, on where could this go going forward. And we talked about this a little bit during the finale, so I won't beat this to death. As a side note, it is always unique, Robbie, when you come to these episodes, because we've been so in one world for like 2.5-3 months now, you know, prepping for it, watching it, discussing about it, and then, you know, doing like a reflection on it. And so it's always kind of weird to close the chapter. Like, I think now we're officially kind of going towards Spider-Man is what it feels like. And so we're going to be turning the page here. That being said, what do you think season 3 could look like for Matthew, for Fisk? And do you think Doomsday affects season 3 at all? And do you think season 3 is where they ultimately end the show, or is this a 6-season thing? You know, are like with the reboot or whatever you're talking about, are they going to keep making more Daredevil seasons or take a break with that? You know,
I feel like Doomsday won't impact it, and probably shouldn't impact it, just because I'm not sure that there's a way to halfway do that. I mean, you know, we don't even know what it's going to be. Thinking about it in terms of like Infinity War, like I just can't imagine how you could really reference something that has massive implications like that without it swallowing the whole story. Yeah, right.
But like if it was like a blip moment, could they make the season in the middle of that? Kind of like Ant-Man and the Wasp was, ish.
Yeah, yeah.
Is there some version of whatever that is? An incursion has happened, and now we're having to still deal with the ramifications. And the show's not about that, but that's the world we're living in. I've wondered that.
Yeah, I mean, I almost. It's going to be so interesting, and I'm not going to get into the Doomsday Secret Wars conversation too much because I want to focus on Daredevil. But I am. You know, if you follow the comic analog, you are looking at this massive world-ending event, and part of me just thinks that they did that so well and so decisively with Infinity War and Endgame that we may be looking at a slightly different version of it. Because I kind of just don't. I think we're finally getting the world kind of up and running again post Endgame.
Right, like this isn't the end, right? It's the beginning, they say.
Well, and, you know, like the original Secret Wars from the 80s, the whole thing is just all these heroes are basically transported to a different planet.
Right.
And none of whatever happens there ever really makes its way back to the world.
And so that wouldn't mess with Daredevil at all if they mess with that idea.
Yeah. So, you know, and that... I don't, you know, I think that they could find a way to do that combined with the Hickman stuff and you know, maybe, but in any event, I do think that it would be better to separate that out. When it comes to Spider-Man, I don't know. I keep thinking about this and what we talked about, the prediction of Daredevil showing up in Spider-Man. And on the one hand, it seems so strange to, like, I don't know if we have confirmation that that's the hand that he's fighting in the trailer or if it's just ninjas. So.
Yeah, I think people just see ninjas and assume, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it is weird to think about. If it is the hand, for sure, it's a strange inclusion if you're not going to link it into the Daredevil mythology. And I don't really know why you would have ninjas fighting Spider-Man at all if you're not going to link it into the Daredevil mythology, because that's not like a classic thing. So, you know, and we've talked about the like spot in the trailer that they could have edited someone out of. But on the other hand, and you brought this up before, I don't know. I think it would be a shame if the season two ending isn't really fulfilled. Like if Spider-Man just breaks Matt out of prison, you know, maybe he breaks Matt out of prison and then Matt like turns himself back in, and that's kind of a very Matt Murdock thing to do.
I don't think it's gonna happen. I don't think he's going to break him out of prison. I don't know if Matt's in it. I don't know. I thought he was, but you're right. It feels like that'd immediately be like, oh, now he's out. And then even if he turns himself back in, it's like, now he's back in. I don't.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if they did it that way, if he kind of goes back at the end of Brand New Day, then you could basically go straight from, they could do something where you go straight from the end of season two to the start of season three, and he's in prison. And they could basically not even address the fact that he shows up in Brand New Day. But then again, if you're going to do that, why even have him show up in Brand New Day? Like if you're, because I feel like part of the benefit of that would be drawing people back to Daredevil. So I don't know, but I think it's,
in the comics, Rob, when he's in prison, what's the kind of stories they tell? Do they immediately kind of get him out of prison, or is it all prison stories, Matthew doing stuff in prison? You know what I mean?
He's there for a bit in that Brubaker run. I would say, you know, not the whole run by any means. Like, it's not belabored, but I would say there's at least the one famous arc. I want to say it goes beyond that. What's kind of strange, it's one of the famous story points from that era is like the very beginning of the run, Matt has visitation hours, and he's supposed to be like meeting with Foggy, who's coming in, and they're figuring out, you know, the next steps. And then Matt hears the prison guards murder Foggy like through the walls. And it sort of does a lot of what they have already now done in Born Again.
Yikes.
But, you know, as we've talked about, that ends with you finding out Foggy isn't actually dead. And it was all like masterminded by Vanessa Fisk. And so they've done a lot of that. And at this point, I think we can safely assume they are not going to pull a Foggy is actually alive twist. So
it seems like it'd be pretty Rise of Skywalker if that happened in the third season.
Well, and then beyond that, it's also, you know, Fisk is in prison when that's happening. So you have this element of, so like there are a lot of the stuff that they've done there has been done. On the other hand, like there's the whole Zdarsky side of him going to prison, kind of as Daredevil. And that's a whole different thing where he explores the kind of, it's a more, I wouldn't say more modern, but a more like criminal justice system, like criminal justice reform oriented look, where, you know, Matt has spent all this time around this, you know, by like defending criminals or sending criminals to jail as Daredevil. And now he kind of sees what the system is, and he sees what leads people there, and how hard it is to break out of those cycles. And then you start to kind of, that all eventually moves Matt towards even more of like a revolutionary mindset, where he kind of feels like he needs to upend the entire system. And I could see them doing something like that here, because they've played with those themes so much in season two.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I've made it no secret. I feel like it's time for them to MCU-ify the show a little bit. And so I was thinking about this. Let's say for kicks and giggles that he's not in Brand New Day. So we don't see Matt. So you just assume he's in prison that whole time. And then I'm going to assume that Spider-Man is not really involved with Doomsday. And I'm going to assume that whatever happens in Doomsday isn't affecting season three of Daredevil. If that's the case, I just think you have to make a world where it's almost, not this far, but it's almost Falcon and the Winter Soldier. It's almost Daredevil and Spider-Man in season three. And I think you just bring the house down. If you could somehow make that happen, think about the viewership you would get on a season three. If Spider-Man, maybe he's not a co-lead character, because that's never going to happen. Although I hate that I'm saying it's never going to happen. But like, I'm ready for the team-up aspect. I'm also ready for the team-up aspect with MCU heroes. And I think it'd be such a cool thing if Spider-Man's a big character in Secret Wars, that the next time we see him is first in season three of Daredevil. You get people subscribing, you get them stoked about it, and then they have Secret Wars later that year. I just feel like it would work so well. And I also, you know, having watched Echo, or half of Echo, and Hawkeye, I think you got to go one of two ways with Fisk. I think he's either not involved at all, and we are just left, like, that was the last we saw of him. He is on the beach, and he's exiled, and there are like government people making sure he stays there. You can do that, and I would be okay with it. The weirdness is, I think he's involved in season three, because he talks about it. I think there's been a few set leaks where he's there. He has a big beard. If he is on the show, you know, it could be a flashback. It could be just that they're checking in on him and he's still there. Kind of like season two of Daredevil, because when he's in prison, it's kind of just like check-ins. It's not about him. They're like doing the hand stuff.
One episode, two episodes.
Yeah. It's like, oh, and then he's in prison cell, and he's like, he interacts with Frank and helps get Frank out, et cetera. But he's there pretty much the whole time. So maybe you do something like that. I think I'm coming around to, okay, if we feel like we have to have him, to me, what a better way than introduce Spider-Man into the show and then have Kingpin sneak out away from the beach and stay really the most under the shadows we've seen, because now he sneaks back to New York, but he doesn't want to be seen by anybody because he's currently evicted. Uh-huh. He's running, you know, he's been sent away. And so he sneaks back, but then Spider-Man and Daredevil become aware of it. And then it's like, Spider-Man's like, oh, that guy, he's back here. And then the two of them trying to figure out how to take him down.
Yeah.
I just think there's got to be some crossover now, and not with Danny Rand. Although I think they'll probably do that. I need crossover with like, where does Doomsday leave the Avengers, the new Avengers, the Thunderbolts?
Yeah.
Where does it leave them? Are they like in their tower watching over New York? Cause if that's the case, I think you got to reach out to Daredevil. There's just got to be a little bit more of that going forward. What they've done so far has been so, so good. That's all I'm hoping for. So I at this point, if I keep talking, I'm just repeating myself.
I do think that, if they could ever find a way to get Spider-Man and Daredevil fully in the same project, I think.
On TV, though, is different than film, I think. You know?
Yeah, well, you know, to me, I think film is more likely. Like, I think
that's what I'm saying. And it's going to be harder on TV.
I mean, to me, it's almost like it wouldn't be to this degree, but I think it would be a almost like a Deadpool and Wolverine like billing, you know, where it's
or maybe Thor Ragnarok, where Hulk doesn't show up until halfway through.
Yeah,
kind of thing,
yeah. But where it's Spider-Man. It's a Spider-Man movie, but you know. Oh. Like,
oh,
but just because,
or the inverse, I was saying for the TV show, it's a Daredevil show, but then Spider-Man's like the Jessica Jones role, but Spider-Man,
I think the problem is, like, you know, they would have to, Sony would have to,
I know,
work out a deal that allows for you know, because they've got like the Spider-Man noir show coming out. So they must have some kind of live action.
Maybe Disney thing. Bites the bullet and puts up like a ton of money or something for just this one show. I don't know.
I mean, I think it would be, I don't know what those figures would be, but I do think it would be worth it and that you would have a lot of people watch Disney Plus all of a sudden. Like every Marvel fan would watch that. If I mean, sort of the same way that at the time that one She-Hulk episode, I remember kind of blew up because so many people were hungry to see Daredevil, where now I think that if you had the promise of Tom Holland, I do like that, like we said before, Daredevil is now kind of he's a big deal, both because of Matt revealing his identity, but also because of how much of a symbol he became. That if there is some new way that Fisk shows up and another hero is having to deal with Fisk, it would now naturally make sense for them to reach out to Matt.
And also be a different interaction, like something fresh.
Yeah.
Right? Matt versus Kingpin, we've seen. He's given him grace. Like, we've seen it. But yeah, if he's like peripherally involved because Spider-Man now has it as a problem, or whatever. And also like a little bit of unique storytelling in that Spider-Man assumably doesn't reveal himself in Brand New Day. There's a little bit of interesting dynamic there because Matt is now very public, you know, but Matt doesn't know who Spider-Man is in their interactions.
There's also an interesting clash between Spider-Man and Kingpin that wouldn't, you know, I don't want them to do the adolescent thing with Spider-Man anymore because they've already done it so well and so often. But the original Bendis Ultimate Spider-Man, he basically used Kingpin as a stand-in for the kind of cynical, jaded adult perspective and Spider-Man as the like naive, like, you know, optimistic, like he thinks that he can take Fisk down if he just secures proof of Fisk being a criminal, and he gets that proof and he gets it out there and Fisk just kind of undoes it. And it's this real, like Bendis uses it as kind of a coming of age moment. That's Spider-Man realizing that that's how the world works. It's not as black and white as good versus evil. And I still think even though we're dealing with an older Peter, that's different than Matt and Fisk's dynamic. And I think that that's something that even a 20-something Peter Parker, because he is still going to be a little bit that like Matt's not naive. You know, Matt is, he's principled, but I don't think Matt ever expects Fisk to do anything or expects the system to work in a way that it won't. He kind of hopes that it would, and he believes that he should, you know, continue to operate within that and move it in the right direction. Mm-hmm. But I think you're right. There are different dynamics to explore.
And I want to add that I would also get a huge kick out of specifically Yelena. I know that Matt had a relationship with Black Widow, I think, in the comics.
Yeah.
And he has expressed that would have been fun to work with Scarlett Johansson. Obviously, that's off the table. It feels like it'd make a lot of sense to have Yelena cameo. I mean, she's a gray area character who's now thrusted out front publicly as far as being an Avenger, and she was like the face of the press conference. Depending on what happens in Doomsday with her, that would make a lot of sense. And I think it could be kind of fun, the interaction.
Yeah.
My point is there are other non-Spider-Man things that still would be fulfilling for me from an MCU perspective, MCU fandom. Okay, we got to go. Here's what I'm going to say. You and I are recording a Marvel Comics 101 episode, The Astonishing yep. X-Men, for Friends from Work Plus. It's just, I had a few listeners ask, it's just the 12 issues, right? I have the Joss Whedon run, 12 issues, right? Apparently yeah, there's so more, I guess?
There are two of those collections.
Okay, I gotcha.
So, but we're just reading the first half of it. It's like four arcs total, essentially. And we're reading the first two. That is sort of a complete story. But okay. If people enjoy it, I would recommend that they finish it out because you can read through the whole thing pretty quickly. But I don't think it's 12 issues is already kind of a lot for us to talk about at once.
And it's not that heavy as far as like, it's not that much. So if you do want to still be a part of that, obviously subscribe to Friends from Work Plus, but I'm sure you could probably go to Panelbound Comics and use our promo code Friends from Work and find the book and then still read it with us and listen to our episode once you're done with it. So well, I know we're doing that. I'm guessing no commitments here that we're going to probably take next week off on the main feed. And so check that out. If you want to hang out with us, come over to Friends from Work Plus. And then going forward, I know X-Men 97 drops in June. I know that I think I'm seeing Mandalorian and Grogu this weekend for a screensaver episode. I really want to see Disclosure Day, which is on June 12th for a potential screensaver episode. We'll probably be doing check-ins with X-Men 97. Probably maybe not weekly, but we'll be talking about where we're at in that process. And then right around that time, everything kind of turns to Spider-Man. So we're trying to make plans for what that looks like. Obviously, we'll do like a saga so far for Spider-Man, and we'll make a YouTube video catching you up, a screen recap, and then hopefully at some kind of premiere or you and I together. And then Comic-Con is that weekend. So I'm just kind of curious like what that looks like if Marvel announces something big, like, you know, 4 days after Spider-Man's out. So July will be a big deal for us.
And we've got some fun comics stuff too, where you and I have been figuring out kind of how best to get you acclimated to the Hickman run that they've kind of more and more been more that's and more right. explicit about adapting when it comes to the Avengers stuff. And
that's right.
Now that I think that Candace, in her new role as mother, has finally earned the right to retire.
Pass it off.
we were watching the J.J. Abrams Star Trek movies the other day, which I want to talk about soon because I haven't seen those in forever. And there's the opening scene of the second one. There are these people with like kind of almost like zebra, you know, black and white faces.
I know where this is going.
And I have been sitting, like, I've been thinking, like, you know, I need to ask Candace about how we want to, like, try to get back in and like, wrap the run. And she was like, oh, man, seeing this reminds me of that comic that you kept making me read that was so boring. And I was like, yeah, you know, and I think that's it. I think that we'll close, close the chapter.
And there's your answer.
But I do think
almost like motherhood maybe changes you a little bit. I don't know.
Yeah, I still think it's hard because it's one of those runs that is it just requires a lot of investment.
No doubt.
Even for superhero comics folks. But I do think that there are some fun ways that we can try to do that.
You know. You really gotta keep it funded for a while.
but I was gonna say we have that kind of coming, so keep a lookout and I think one way or another we're going to try to finish our journey through all of that prior to Doomsday and then maybe hit Secret Wars either in that same period or between Doomsday and Secret Wars. But also I won't get fully into this now, but we did recently update the website with a bunch of new fun kind of watch order stuff, and I want to kind of hop on Friends from Work Plus and explain some of the thought process there and kind of how to interact with that. But for purposes of this episode, since we are kind of ending this era, and since I know a lot of people are kind of getting their minds oriented around Doomsday, we do have some ways to kind of shortcut through the multiverse saga. And there are some other things that I'm kind of thinking about there, but I I've gotten really passionate about trying to make that really accessible for folks, because I, like we talked about at the beginning of this episode, I know it can be really unwieldy. Hey, thanks. No, it is, it's been a lot of fun to see people interact with it. But if you are listening to this and you're kind of wanting to get caught up or just rewatch everything, there are a lot of kind of fun ways to do that there. And we'll be talking about that more. But if you're curious, you can go to our website and check out our break room page and follow
and
along.
And I'll try to be sure to make sure everything else is updated on there. Like, we have some merch on there, and I think the stock is updated. We put Daredevil in our rankings and the rewatch links. So yeah, the FFWpodcast.com is a good place to go check out some of this stuff. And or maybe you're I have a friend who's taking his son through the whole journey now again. So maybe you're taking someone
nice.
On the journey that's interested about Brand New Day or Doomsday or whatever. That the break room's a great page to figure out if you're gonna do a shortened version or the whole thing or whatever. Thank you guys. This Daredevil stuff has been really fun. We got some new listeners during the Daredevil run, and so that was fun. And it's good to have you on board. Thanks for supporting this podcast. Like I said, we'll probably be off next week, but then we got some fun plans for the summer. Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting. We'll see you next time here on Friends for More.